Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Medicine of Mindset Summit. I'm Jana Danielson. I am your co-host for this full week that, as you know, has been packed with amazing speakers, hopefully lots of light bulb moments and little sparkly gems of information that you can take to implement into your own life. Or maybe you know someone really important to you who you're thinking, oh, I got to let them know about what I just learned or the person that I just met on the summit. So our next speaker will not disappoint. I promise you that. Nathan Crane is a natural health researcher and a holistic cancer coach. He is an award-winning author, an inspirational speaker, Amazon number one best-selling, and 20-time award-winning documentary filmmaker. We were just talking before we hit record about some of the work that he has done in Costa Rica with sustainability. And really, this guy with more than 15 years in the health and wellness field as a researcher, advocate, and more, Nathan's reach is millions and millions of people whose lives have been touched by this amazing man. And we get him with us right now on the Medicine of Mindset virtual stage. Nathan, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, thank you for that really warm welcome and introduction. And thank you for putting this event on. I think the topic that we're focusing on here is super, super important and top of mind, you know, for a nice little pun there, something that I think when we're talking about health and wellness, disease prevention, disease reversal, fighting disease, as well as how do we live as long and healthy and vital as we possibly can, this is actually the thing that I think is most important that often gets pushed to the side, is what is the science and the effectiveness of our thoughts, our emotions, our beliefs, our energy, our focus, our attention when it comes to preventing disease, helping the body reverse disease. As you read there, a lot of my work over the past decade plus has been around helping people with cancer, researching cancer, working with cancer patients, working with people reversing cancer, working with doctors all around the world. And this is one of the things that we see in common with people who become cancer, what I call cancer conquerors, people who not only reverse cancer, but keep it away, keep it from coming back, but most importantly, transform their life and become so much happier and healthier doing it. And there is commonalities among people who reverse cancer with a certain kind of mindset. And we can talk about that. We can talk about the science of it. We can talk about what can each of us do to live healthier, happier lives, cancer-free lives, even prevent cancer. But a lot of it comes down to our thoughts and beliefs and how we think about ourselves and how we think about our health. And I'm excited to get into that with you. So thank you again for having me, for putting this on. And hopefully we can share some great tools and tips and strategies with people to really take control of their health.
Agreed. Okay, let's do it. So I don't know this story. How did you get into this area of expertise? Why and how the cancer area of health?
Well, I'll share the short version. I was very sickly as a teenager. I was on a really poor diet, standard American diet, on a lot of the common vaccines. I was sick all the time. I was on antibiotics very often. I would get the flu and strep throat multiple times a year. And then I ended up going through some serious childhood adverse events and traumas. Ended up becoming homeless at 15, addicted to drugs and alcohol and cigarettes. And by 18, I was almost dead. I mean, my immune system was shot. My adrenals were shot. My entire body was fading. And mentally, emotionally, I was lost, confused, outraged, angry, sad, depressed, you name it, all of it at a very young age. And at 18, I had this kind of big awakening moment, and I really decided to transform my life 100%. Moved to San Diego, California. It was like 2005, and really started over. I started meditating, started learning about health, started going to the gym. I quit smoking, eventually quit drinking and drugs and all of that, became totally sober, and got really committed to being as healthy as I possibly can. Researching, learning, reading every book I could, meditating very often. And learning to heal these traumas that I had acquired and heal these childhood adverse events and going through all of that. And I was maybe 7 or 8 years into that journey, thought I knew a lot about health and wellness and spirituality, meditating with, you know, Buddhist monks and master Zen monks all the time. And, you know, kind of had this probably overly confident in what I thought I knew. And then my grandfather was diagnosed with cancer. And it was a really big wake-up call, because when I went to visit him in Arizona and saw how sick he was and how much in pain he was, which in fact I learned wasn't from the cancer, it was from the chemotherapy and radiation, and how his hair was falling out and how it was just so painful to even walk, you know, 15 feet to the bathroom. Sitting there next to him, I knew my training up to that point told me that there had to be something I could do for him, but I knew nothing about cancer. And I, like everybody, like most people that I meet, didn't know anything about cancer, hadn't done any research on it, hadn't had much experience with it, didn't really know what to do or what to say, and just feeling helpless and hopeless. Had you know, some decent conversation with him, but left there feeling very hopeless, very helpless. And shortly after that, he passed away. Hmm. And that set me on this journey to just discover everything I possibly could about cancer. I started producing online summits. I started interviewing hundreds of doctors up to this point, integrative oncologists, naturopathic, you know, medicine doctors, Qigong masters, you know, doctors and experts from every field, and just really dove deep into the literature, into the science, working with people hands-on, coaching people, getting certified as a coach, you know, experimenting and just learning everything I possibly could, creating documentaries and series and conferences, because I wanted to understand this thing we call cancer. I want to understand why we're so afraid of it. I want to understand what causes it and want to understand what we can do about it, whether I get cancer, a family member is diagnosed with cancer. And what I learned along the way was that I can help a lot of people by learning what I learned. And when we learn what cancer actually is and what causes it and what we can do about it, we don't have to be so afraid of it. And in fact, majority of cancer can be prevented. And even more so, even if you have cancer, you can live with cancer with almost no symptoms. You can extend the, you can extend your lifespan, improve quality of life massively without having to be rushed into treatments you know nothing about out of fear through a prognosis that says, if you don't do this thing, you're going to die in 3 months. And that is very often what causes people to make decisions out of fear that then lead them to becoming very sick and dying of something else. You know, the statistics are so skewed in this country when it comes to cancer specifically, because one, people think that the statistics of cancer, they don't realize that what the doctor says, if you, you know, if you do this treatment, here is the outcome. Here's a potential outcome, right? If you have 3 months left to live, and they don't realize that that is actually from the standard conventional treatment statistics. They don't realize that there are some studies that say if you don't do anything, you actually can live longer and healthier and better quality of life than if you do those treatments. They also don't realize that you know, chemotherapy has a 2.5% effective rate when grouped among 22 adult malignancies in improving 5-year survival, meaning that 97.6 to 97.7% of the time, it doesn't improve lifespan past 5 years. And yet chemotherapy is the number one thing that people are rushed into. And so it's just, it's out of fear. And so a big part of what I do is help people to understand cancer so you don't have to make decisions out of fear. Because as you know, and I'm sure many of the speakers may talk about, is for us to make sound decisions for our life, for our health, for our well-being, we have to do it from a place of either inspiration, right? It's just that feeling of like that intuitive hit, that inspiration. You know I need to do this because this, I just feel it in my bones, right? I feel it in my stomach. Or from a place of, in meditation, and I do this very often, is if I'm making a tough decision, I will sit and meditate briefly, and then I will ask, should I do this or this? Should I continue down this or let this go? You know, I ask very clear questions, and the answer, when it comes, it's so clear and you feel it. And then when you say, okay, that's what I'm going to do, and then you feel this like weight that's lifted off your shoulders, you know, what I believe is that's your soul. That's your higher self. That's your, highest self. Some people call it God, universe, whatever you want to call it, kind of speaking to you through you. But, you know, we also know that there are neurons in your heart, and there are neurons in your stomach and your intestines. And when we feel these intuitive hits, which very often guide us in the best direction of our lives, when we listen to it, good things tend to happen. And when we ignore those things, is what I call the hammer of life comes and starts to give you little taps on the head until you listen. And if you don't listen, you know, that hammer, that hit from that hammer gets harder and harder and harder until you do listen. So I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question. I went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but So back to, you know, that's why I become so passionate about it. Is one is I've learned personally what is possible and how powerful we really can be when it comes to preventing disease and helping our bodies actually reverse disease. But more importantly, finding that freedom, that mental, emotional freedom, that healer within, that healing power within. And, you know, being able to share that with others is what brings me so much fulfillment. I still get messages from people from years ago who say, you know, I wasn't given more than a few months to live. I found your work, went to your conferences, you know, read your books, follow your programs, whatever it is. And I'm still here years later and I'm living the best life I've ever lived. Or, you know, my cancer has, my tumors have reduced dramatically, and in some cases have gone away completely. You know, it's those kinds of stories that is so fulfilling for me to continue doing this work and helping as many people as I can.
Like, so that's a huge wow. And I know that in most cases, those of us who are in this have been called to this world of healing. 99.9% of the time, we have been impacted in some way, personally, or, you know, one degree of separation. And, you know, is it the gift that we needed to, you know, get on the path that we were intended to get on? And so I want to touch on one really important thing that you've now mentioned probably about five or six times since we started this interview. And it caught me the first time, the way you framed it. So we have heard for years and years and years around, you know, the language has been cure for cancer, research for the cure for cancer. You haven't used that word once. You continue to say reverse, reverse, reverse. Can you speak to that and how you are rooted in that? Because that has a very different energy, a very different frequency. I feel like cure means you have this diagnosis and then you need the cure to be fixed. Yeah. When you say the word reverse, it's like, here's this ball of yarn and you have control over unraveling it. Yeah, you might need some help along the way. So speak to that.
Yeah, that's such a great question, because it reminds me of what Dr. Thomas Lodi, who is a good friend and colleague of mine. He sees cancer patients both in Thailand and in the United States. And one of the things he said to me years ago when I was filming for my documentary, he said, look, when people come to me, they're not really asking me, how do I get rid of this cancer? What they're really asking me is, how do I stop making cancer? That's what he hears them saying. Because he knows, as I know, as anybody who's been in this deep research knows, that we make cancer inside of our bodies. People who are out there online, and I think they're doing a massive disservice to people who say, oh, cancer is a genetic disease. It's a disease of the genome. And people go, oh yeah, disease of the genome. One, they have no idea what that means. And they're, you know, millions of people are watching these videos. And two, it's completely false. Cancer is not a disease of the genome in the sense that it is primarily genetic. And so we have to understand what cancer is and what causes it to realize that we are making it. And then we can ask the question, how do we stop making cancer? Cancer is not something that we catch. It's not like a virus or a bacteria, right? That's how we think of cancer, that, oh, she got cancer. I got cancer. It's like, I got this thing from out there in here. And then we go to an oncologist and they say, we need to pull that thing out of you. We need to burn it out of you. We need to cut it out of you. We need to radiate it out of you. And in the process, we are going to destroy your immune system and your healthy cells as well, because which is what chemotherapy and radiation do, is they also kill your healthy cells in addition to the cancer cells. So now you're fighting just to rebuild immunity, which often leads to other health complications. So, you know, I guess I can't speak for if someone says it's a cancer is a disease of the genome, if they really know what they're talking about. But I think that confuses people because, yes, cancer is your genes, the DNA becoming damaged, the mitochondria dying off in the cells, and those cells hanging on for life, wanting to survive, start to ferment chronically. And through that chronic fermentation, they basically are still producing ATP, but only a few ATP, right? The energy source of the cells. They're only producing a few instead of 30, whatever it is, 32, 36. They're only producing like three ATP. They're very inefficient and they require a lot of glucose usually to run. But what they're really trying to do is just stay alive. And then unfortunately they replicate pretty much out of control, right? And so by replicating out of control, because they're trying to stay alive, they're not very efficient. They're chronically fermenting because of the DNA damage that has happened to the cell. And if you have a healthy immune system, you have a healthy body, you're not under stress, you're not producing cortisol 24/7, you know, you're sleeping well, you're eating well, you're not eating a high inflammatory diet, you know, you're really taking care of yourself, you're sleeping 7 to 9 hours a night, you practice stress reduction practices, you eat foods that are anti-inflammatory, your immune system is upregulated. Maybe you're doing sauna, ice baths, you're doing exercise, you know, all these things that we associate with good health, a good, healthy quality of life, thinking well, meditating, your chances of cancer will go down exponentially. But how many people in the US and really around the world live that way today? And in fact, most people are not living that way. In fact, most people are sitting all day long and they're not moving often at all. They're sedentary, right? They're eating potato chips and fried foods and chemically toxic foods. They're eating processed meats, which are known carcinogens. They're stressed out all the time. You go out into traffic and traffic stresses you out, and you go to a job that you hate and it's like, oh, I hate this job. And then you go home and you watch the news and the news makes you pissed off at Republicans or Democrats. And just saying those words might piss somebody off, right? It's like, so people are stressed out all the time, which is constantly releasing cortisol, which is downregulating your immune system. When you're constantly upregulating adrenaline, norepinephrine, cortisol, et cetera, it kicks on what we call your adrenal system and it turns down your immune system. And when you are, and that is also known as the sympathetic nervous system. When you are meditating, when you're relaxing, when you maybe you exercise, you get a little sympathetic response, and then now you rest, you go home, you feel good, you get this massive parasympathetic response, you get dopamine, you get all of these neurochemicals that activate an anti-inflammatory, a healing, a rejuvenating response. And your body is designed to identify, target, kill, and then remove and recycle cancer cells. I have cancer inside of me right now. You do. Everybody tuning in does. It's not something to be afraid of, and it's not something to fear as this invading enemy. We're making cancer through our diet and lifestyle every single day, and through our actions, through our words, through our thoughts, through our belief systems, we can stop making cancer. We can reduce the DNA damage that's happening. We can reduce the cancer that's being created in our bodies. And that's the power that we have. Now, that's not to say there isn't a genetic predisposition to cancer. We know that 3% to 5% of cancers are hereditary. Depends who you listen to. Cancer.gov, I believe, says 5 to 7% is hereditary, meaning of the genome, genetic cancer, hereditary cancer. Other scientists say 3%, 5%. Dr. Bruce Lipton, good friend and colleague of mine, says, look, it can be as low as 1% or less, because when we take control of our minds, our belief systems, our subconscious, and we activate that healing response as often as possible, and then we are living healthy as well, we turn off or we downregulate cancer genes, and we upregulate hundreds of genes that are associated with healing and longevity, right? And those are the genes that we actually have control over. We have control over, you know, the gene, the genetic expression, so many different genes of expression within our bodies through diet and lifestyle. And yes, you might be, some people might be a little more predisposed towards cancer because of their hereditary, because of their family history, and so forth. But one thing that Dr. Lipton says very clearly is, look, there is no such thing as a gene that causes cancer. That's a lie. It's a myth. There's no gene that causes cancer. And we know that because look at the BRCA1 gene, for example. 50% of the women with BRCA1 gene never get cancer. So if it was the gene that caused cancer, then 100% of women with that gene would have cancer, but 50% of them never get cancer. So it's not the gene that causes cancer. If it's not the gene, then what is it? It's the environment in which the cells live that can activate the expression of that genetic expression of cancer. And so we need to create an environment, an anti-inflammatory environment, a healing environment, a rejuvenating environment, an alkaline environment in the body to reduce the potential expression of those cancer genes. And we see this again and again, because even people with cancer, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, cancers, breast cancers, colon cancers, you name it. I've met many people over the years that start to implement these diet and lifestyle changes. They switch to a primarily plant-based, whole food, nutrient-dense diet. They get off of processed meats and dairy and high inflammatory processed foods. They eat lots of anti-cancer foods and cruciferous vegetables and these kinds of things. They start meditation practices, Qigong practices, energy healing practices. They go through childhood trauma, emotional healing. There's a lot of ways to do that. They start to implement things like sauna, which is also not only incredible for the mood and for dopamine, but also for detoxification and eliminating chemicals, as well as repair and rejuvenation of the body. They start focusing on sleep better, sleeping more, deeper quality of sleep. And then, and it's not guaranteed, and we can never say it's guaranteed, but we can see quality of life improve. We often see people's cancer stop growing and they live a great quality of life for years and years. Or in some cases, their cancer completely reverses. It actually regresses and completely goes away. So the reason I don't ever say cure for cancer is because there is no real cure for cancer. In terms of when we say cure for cancer, we think of a prescription medication, a magic pill for the pharmaceutical companies that this is going to cure my cancer. We will never have it. This is why billions and billions and billions of dollars from people who donate lovingly to these nonprofits, searching for the cure for cancer, unfortunately, we'll never find it ever, because there's not one cure for cancer, because there are multiple causes of cancer. When we understand those causes, stress, excessive stress, chronic inflammation, diet and lifestyle, sedentarism, obesity, excess glucose in the bloodstream, these things that lead to, you know, insulin resistance, all of these are precursors and underlying causes of cancer. You can't take one prescription drug and solve all of that. We know that because there's not one prescription drug that solves heart disease, that solves diabetes, that solves any of these chronic inflammatory metabolic related diseases. And that's what cancer is. It's a chronic inflammatory metabolic related disease, just like diabetes, just like Alzheimer's, just like heart disease. And what's really interesting is I actually have come to look at all of these diseases as branches of the same tree, that the underlying, you know, the trunk is the same causes, and it just shows up differently in people, which is why very often, if you end up with type 2 diabetes, your risk for cancer goes up exponentially, like twofold or threefold, depends. If you have obesity, then your risk for heart disease, cancer, and diabetes goes up exponentially, right? And so getting the excess fat off of the body, eating healthier, exercising, meditating, all of a sudden reduces your risk for all of these same diseases. Why is that? Because they're expressions of the exact same thing. And Dr. Sunil Pai, I think he said it best to me years ago. He says, you know, cancer is a loss of self. And I think it took me a long time to realize what he meant by that. Because I never asked him what he meant by that, but I came to understand what he meant by that is, you know, when we are one with our true self, our whole, healthy, happy, fulfilled self, which is vital and vibrant and energetic, we're taking care of our lives holistically, we're eating well and sleeping well and thinking well, we're, you know, caring for our mind and our emotions and our community, we're caring for our bodies and our planet, right? That is what I would consider being in alignment with our true self. We are living a life of integrity, of quality, of meaning and purpose. And often that means contributing in a positive way to other people's lives. And when we lose that sense of ourselves, we get disconnected from that true aspect of ourselves, then we lose that relationship to our health. And we allow the environment of whether it's greed, it's anger, it's vengeance, depression, it's selfishness, any of these things to kind of settle in and take over, then we start to behave in ways that degrade our physical bodies. And we know stress contributes to a chronic inflammatory response and to a sympathetic nervous system response, which downregulates the immune system. So therefore, your body is not fighting cancer. It's just trying to barely survive. And so, you know, that loss of self. And so what do? We have to find ourself again. We have to find the thing that brings us joy and happiness. We have to commit to our health and well-being. We have to find something in life that gives us energy and drive and contribute to other people in a meaningful way. People, plants, the animal, the planet, something that you can wake up and look forward to that pulls you forward instead of, oh God, another day of drudgery and traffic and a job I hate and stress and, you know, all that. It's like, nobody wants that. Nobody wants to live that way, but we choose it because we don't choose otherwise. So, you know, just to kind of put a final pin on that point, this is why, you know, we have so much control in our lives through our mind, through our thinking, through our belief systems, through our action. We have so much control over cancer and basically every chronic disease on the planet. And no, it will never come in the form of a pill because pills don't get to the root cause. So what do we have to do? We have to get to the root cause. What's that root cause? It's the stress. It's the poor diet. It's the poor choices in our life. Well, what can we do about that? Everything, everything. Create new habits and practices that lead toward health and wellness and vitality. And we have to do that through educating ourselves and through and finding a commitment, finding that commitment to want to be healthy. How did I quit smoking two packs of cigarettes a day at 19 years old? You know, I started smoking when I was like 9 years old, got up to two packs a day when I was 16, 17, 18. I'd been smoking a pack a day up until that point. And by 19, it was like 19, 20. How did I stop smoking cigarettes cold turkey? I'd been addicted for like a decade, over a decade. And what I did was I decided I want to get healthy. And I started going to the gym. I started doing some exercise, didn't know what the heck I was doing. But I was starting to want to be healthy. I made the commitment to myself. Look, I'm tired of being sick. I'm tired of feeling like crap. I'm, you know, tired of smelling like cigarettes and drinking alcohol. And it's like, I'm tired of living this life that is so unfulfilling, that is so painful, that is, you know, stomach hurts all the time. And I'm fatigued and I'm depressed. It's like, I'm just tired of it. So let me find, what does it mean to actually be healthy? And I started going to the gym, and then I'd finish working out and I'd go outside and then I'd light up a cigarette. And I'd be like, I remember one time I was like, what are you doing? Like, you're here committed to getting healthy. And then you walk outside and you smoke a cigarette, which we know causes cancer. We know it's, you know, one of the worst things you can do for yourself. And from that moment forward, it was like, I am done with this. And I made a commitment. I set a date. I stuck to it. I quit cold turkey. And then it was like, all right, what's next? What's next? Oh, I'm going to start meditating. I'm going to learn how to meditate. I start practicing that. I start reading it. I start researching it. All right, what's next? Oh, you know what? I need to start cleaning up my diet a little bit. I'm drinking 3 Red Bulls every day, and I'm drinking 2 giant things of crap coffee from Starbucks every day. And I'm eating a big thing of greasy breadsticks. And like, that was the bulk of my diet. I'm at a really high stress job. You know, all of that. And I feel like crap. I'm sleeping like crap. I'm stressed out. My body starts shutting down. I start getting sick. No idea what's going on. And it was like, I need to quit this high stress job and focus on me. So I did it. It's like, boom, I'm done. Like, I don't know what's next, but I'm done. And it's been that way ever since. 20 years old, 21, 22, 23, ever since. It's like, all right, what's next? And so people can look at their own life and go, all right, where am I at right now? What's holding me back the most? And what do I need to do right now? What can I change right now? What new thing can I start implementing right now that I know in my heart is the thing that's going to give me the most health and fulfillment and help move me forward in a good direction? You can't change everything overnight, right? You can't change it all overnight, but you can figure out what is that one thing for you you need to focus on and start focusing on that. Is that start meditating 20 minutes every morning? All right. We know that calms the nervous system. It activates parasympathetic. It activates the immune system, reduces excess cortisol levels. You know, maybe you're most stressed out in the afternoon. All right. That's when you sit down and do your 20 or 30 minute guided meditation. Boom. You got it. You know, what is it? Is it your diet? Are you eating a tub of ice cream, you know, 3 or 4 days a week and you know it's basically killing you? All right. Let's figure out how can we reduce that and replace it with something that gives you that dopamine hit, but is significantly healthier for you, right? Figure out what it is for you. And then we take one step at a time to help you achieve your goals.
Nathan, I feel like you have just gifted like a complete reframe on, first of all, a word that I know many, many people fear. And I mean, cancer runs in my family. My grandma had breast cancer. My dad had prostate cancer, which we were told was the same genetic lineage as what caused the breast cancer and like his mom, my grandma, right? So then we were, my brother and sister and I were told like, be on high alert, right? Like be diligent, be. And so it's almost like you're waiting for the shoe to fall over years and years and years. And, you know, as I was thinking about that, I was thinking about my mom had told me just maybe a year ago that because her mom had high blood pressure when she was in her 60s, when my mom was like in her late 30s, her doctor just put her on high blood pressure medication because her mom was on high blood pressure medication. And so I was like, what? You've been on this medication for 20 years and you've never actually, right? We just surrender. We surrender to the diagnosis and to the fear of this is prevention. And actually it's not. And so when someone thinks about committing, first of all, that C word, let's talk about that C word, right? To eating healthy or meditating or, you know, sleeping better or stepping away from a job. But the people you've worked with, how do you get past that mindset block where there's all these, it's hard. How will I pay my bills? What will I give us a sense of how you've helped people work through taking, you've given us lots of first steps, but what is happening up here and how have you coached people to actually take that step?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most important things for sure. One is I say education, like we have to keep educating ourselves with this kind of information. So you could listen to this interview and go, yeah, that all sounds great. And then go about your day and never look into any of this any further. And, you know, you might get a little inspiration, you might make a little change or something, but if you don't keep educating yourself, you know, whether it's through, you know, listening to more of these interviews, it's listening to podcasts, it's, you know, I've done almost 400 hours of these kinds of interviews with the top experts around the world inside healinglife.net. So you can go in there and, you know, listen to a couple of those every week, whatever it is, but you have to keep educating yourself about this because it starts to rewire our belief systems and our subconscious thinking. And it keeps our minds focusing on, okay, yeah, you know what? I need to do this or I need to do that. Sometimes you need to hear it from somebody else. Sometimes you need to hear it from someone that has an MD after their name before you believe it. And I'm totally fine with that. Like, don't believe anything I say, you know, go into healinglife.net and listen to all these MDs saying what I'm saying, because they discovered this not through their medical training, but actually through the science and literature that they had to discover on their own or through their functional medicine training, because they don't teach this stuff in the conventional medical schools because those are primarily funded by the pharmaceutical companies. They don't want to teach diet and lifestyle. It's not profitable, right? So number one is continue educating yourself. Buy books. You can go get my book for free, Becoming Cancer Free. It's becomingcancerfree.com. I just give it to free to everybody because I want people to continue getting these kinds of resources. Listen to all the interviews, buy this summit that you've put on here and listen to, I know your speakers have a lot of great information they're sharing. So it's just a commitment to ongoing education. I mean, look, I have thousands, literally thousands of hours of research, of reading scientific papers, of interviewing hundreds and hundreds of doctors in the space, of listening to podcasts and reading books. And it's like, and I will continue that for the rest of my life. Even if I read the same thing again and again and again, from somebody else is saying it differently, is because I'm always wanting to learn and improve and grow. And that's the mindset. We have to have that kind of growth mindset. Number one. Number two is you have to ask yourself this question and be honest with yourself. If I don't change anything about what I'm doing with my life, where am I going to be in 5 years or in 10 years from now? If I keep eating the same way I'm eating, if it's processed food, it's high inflammatory foods, it's potato chips, it's ice cream, it's lots of sugar, it's lots of things we know that feed cancer, where am I going to be in 10 years from now if I don't change anything about my diet? Where am I going to be in 10 years from now if I don't change anything about my stress levels, right? If I'm stressed out all the time, I'm watching the news every morning, which kicks in that stress response. I'm angry at drivers. I'm angry at my job. Angry in my relationship all the time. If I don't change anything about that, where am I going to be in 10 years? I'm going to be better or worse or the same. I guarantee you, if you don't change anything and your situation is already not very pleasant, it's not going to be the same. It's going to be worse because these things build up and get worse over time. Cancer takes years to actually form in the body, from one cell to two cells to millions of cells, billions of cells, actually, before it can be even identified, can take 7 to 10 years. And a lot of people don't even discover the cancer until they've been forming it in their bodies for decades. So for sure, you're like, oh, I don't have a cancer diagnosis right now. But if you keep going in the direction you're going, and we know that cancer rates are continuously increasing. In 1905, we had less than 1% of people had cancer. In 1950, 10% of people had cancer. Now we're almost to 50% of cancer. So from less than 1% to 10% to almost 50%. That's flipping a coin. And that's not because, that's nothing other than our diet and lifestyles and the environment in which we live. And a lot of this we have control over. And I teach this in my books and in our courses and a lot of the things that we can change pretty easily to significantly reduce our risk of cancer or improve our body's ability to fight cancer. So, if you don't change anything about your mindset, your belief systems, your stress levels, if you don't change anything about your relationship, your job, the home you're living in, which you may not know is put off gassing VOCs, which are highly volatile inflammatory chemicals that are potentially leading to cancer. If you don't have something that's cleaning your air, your water, these kinds of things that we teach, 10 more years of that, where are you going to be if you don't change anything, right? You can pretty clearly see like, okay, I'm going to be the same or most likely worse than where I am now, potentially with a diagnosis if I don't have one. Okay, is that what you want? Ask yourself this honestly. Is that the life that you want? Most people is going to be no, right? No, I don't want that life. I don't want to be sick and destitute and depressed and upset and angry. I don't even want to be that right now when I'm experiencing that now. Okay, so if that's the case, then you need to right now accept the fact that you can change that. You can change your destiny. That doesn't have to be your destiny. Whatever the doctor told you does not have to be your destiny. I call a prognosis the fake expiration date. And people who don't believe that fake expiration date very often live way past it. And people who believe it, and there have been some really sad anecdotal case studies on this where people were told they had 3 months left to live, and they believed it so deeply that they literally died on the day that the doctor, that was 3 months after their prognosis, and it wasn't from cancer, they died from something else. Got hit by a bus was one story. There are multiple stories that I've heard on this from loved ones telling their stories. Different things that happened that they had literally believed themselves into dying. What happens if you believe the opposite? No, I'm not going to accept that. That date has nothing to do with me. I am going to find the way to be strong and vital and healthy and happy. I'm going to learn everything I can. I'm going to make the changes as I go the best that I can. I'm going to get guidance and support. So that's the third thing, is get a coach, get guidance, get support. You know, we have a coaching program called Conquering Cancer Group Coaching, but get any guidance or coaching or support from anybody that you can, where you can ask questions and get your questions answered from people who have either gone through what you're going through or have helped many others get to where you're trying to go. It's the best way, right? It's like, if I want to become a professional athlete, you know, am I going to go ask questions to and play with, you know, middle school basketball players, for example, or am I going to go seek out the best college players or NBA players and ask them, you know, try and get that guidance, get that coaching, ask them questions, see what they do, emulate what they're doing, right? We want to learn from and emulate the people who are already successful at what we're trying to achieve. And yes, that is totally possible for any disease on the planet, including cancer. So there is always hope. There's always things you can do. Of course, there's no guarantee that you're going to cure or reverse anything, but certainly you can gain more clarity, more confidence, more education, and more support for yourself and for what you're trying to achieve. If that's becoming cancer-free, if it's preventing cancer, or if it's just living your healthiest, happiest self that you can be. And that's really what it comes down to. Keep educating yourself. Look at, if you don't change anything, where you're going to be in 10 years. And if you don't want that, then you commit to start making changes now, this day forward, every day forward, and make that commitment to your health. I am committed to becoming healthy, and I will do what it takes. And it doesn't matter how long it takes. I can do a little bit once a week. I can start making little changes. Doesn't have to be overnight. And three, get the support you need, guidance, coaches, experts in your corner that can guide you to achieving the success that you're looking for. And that does not have to be expensive. I mean, our coaches charge like $47 a month. You know, a round of chemotherapy can cost tens of thousands, if not $100,000, right? So those things don't have to be expensive. It's up to you to find, to take action, to commit to yourself, and then to start seeing the results.
I don't actually know what even more to say. Like, you've put this framework together, and you've inspired and encouraged in such a simple yet direct way. The tough love was so lovely packaged with this, just the softness to it. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone make a cancer, or, you know, like you said, I mean, fill in the blank disease, reversal process sound like the kind of life that we want to aspire to live anyway, because this is it, right? Like I always say to my clients, we didn't come with replacement parts. Yes, we can get new knees and new hips and all these things, but gosh, you guys, if these were not supposed to last us, don't you think the man upstairs would have sent somehow a little package along with us saying, here's your additional knees that you'll need 6 to 7 decades into your life? And that wasn't the case. And so I have a question. And you know, we chatted about this before we went on air, and I know I see that the whole conversation really touches on this question. And so I'm still going to ask it, you know, what do you think is not being talked about enough in your area of expertise? And do you want to drive home an extra point or the same point, or is there something new you want to sprinkle on this piece?
Yeah. Thank you for that. What I'd like to say on that point is early on in my research and experimentation, I would kind of go back and forth between how important is the mind and emotions and spirituality when it comes to health and healing, and how important is diet and nutrition and exercise and so forth. And I would go back and forth. Oh, it's 100% mind. You can solve everything with the mind, right? And then it's like, no, you need some nutrition. You need to eat well. You need to, you know, do some exercise. If you don't do any of that, you eat really terrible for a long time, even with a really, really great mindset, you may probably still get sick. So, okay. So then go deep in the research, like, oh, you can, you know, I meet people that completely reversed cancer just by switching to like an anti-cancer whole food plant-based diet and didn't make many other changes. I'm like, oh, you can do it all with diet. And I go down that path. And then as the deeper I get in the research, the more people I talk to, the more time I spend with it, the more that I use logic and reasoning, and the more that I, really think on this over the years, I've come to the belief that it's about 80-20. Mm-hmm. And 80% of our health and healing and wellness is in the mind and emotions, belief systems, spirituality. 80%. And I know that seems really high. I would even go as low as to say 70 and 20. So 80-20 or 70-30, roughly. 20 to 30% is diet, nutrition, herbs, sauna, exercise, you know, sleep, absolutely. But I say 70 to 80% mind, emotions, belief system, spirituality, because you can do so much with that. And I have seen multiple people who did everything right on the physical side, but didn't take care of the mental, emotional side. They were still stressed out. And when you're stressed out and you're dealing with childhood adverse events and traumas that you've never healed, what it's doing is it is suppressing your immune system. So all this immune boosting stuff you're doing over here is having some effect, but not enough effect, because you got so much cortisol and so many hormones dumping through your system, constantly turning off your immune system, that it can't do its job anyway. So you can eat the best immune boosting stuff, superfoods on the planet, but if you're not healing mentally, emotionally, if you're not working on your stress levels, you're not meditating, doing Qigong and relaxation and deep breathing, these kinds of things, it's very likely that your body is not going to heal. And so where I think we are missing is people who go down this path of natural medicine and holistic healthcare, they love the diet, they love the mushrooms, they love the herbs, they love the smoothies and juices, they love the anti-cancer diet, give me diet, 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 diet. Whether they change it or not, that's a different story. Whether they actually implement what they learn or not, but that's the thing that's most attractive, because I think it's the thing that sounds the most tangible and the easiest. It's like, oh yeah, I could eat an apple and not eat a bag of potato chips. Like I can get my mind around that, right? Versus on this side, how do you get your mind around, yeah, I've got this, you know, I was raped or molested as a kid, and I've got this trauma that's never been dealt with, and I can't even face it. I can't even look at it. I don't even know what to do or where to start. It's this intangible thing. And yet, you know, not even fully realizing that that may have released neuropeptides into your organ system, and it's causing chronic inflammation year after year inside your body, leading to chronic diseases like cancer. Not realizing that that thing alone, that traumatic event or those childhood adverse events or that stress you experience every day, is the thing that's preventing you from healing. Dr. Keisha Ewers, once she found out something terrible had happened to her son, she took massive blame for it. She judged and blamed herself, and she knew it. She knew it immediately when the cancer, breast cancer grew within 3 months, she knew what it was from. She had taken on this self-judgment and this self-blame for not being able to, what she felt was able to protect her son from this atrocity. And within a few months of practicing emotional healing on herself and going through deep forgiveness practices on herself, as well as on the perpetrator, she literally didn't change anything except mental, emotional healing, and watch the cancer completely reverse. And she's one of many stories where this has happened. So I really believe that 70 to 80% of our healing has to come from the mental, emotional, belief system and spiritual side. We've got to focus way more attention on that. And we still need to clean up the diet. We still need to exercise. We still need to get good quality of sleep, because those things are really important, and they will help and they will exponentially improve your body's ability to fight cancer. So, you know, that's really it. It's like, and I say it all the time, that it is so, so important. People kind of put it off as this thing. Like, yeah, I'll get to it when I can. Right now I got to do these other things. Like, well, maybe that's the one thing you should actually be doing first, and then working on these other things later.
Yeah. So good. So good. All right. Last question. What, and you've dropped little hints about this throughout our chat, but can you leave our audience with just a little bit of, you know, more of that personal Nathan Crane, what you're doing on a daily basis to make sure that you can show up for, you know, your audience like you do day after day after day? That doesn't just happen by chance. So what are some of your mindset hacks or tips that you could share?
Yeah, I mean, happy to share things that I do personally. I mean, these are things that I've accumulated over years, right? I didn't just start doing all this right away. It was like, it's become, and I'm doing more things as time goes on. First thing I do when I wake up is I'm laying there in bed. I meet whatever crazy dream I just woke up from, or whatever thought I'm having. I might be sore or tired. I might be like, oh, I don't want to get up. Whatever immediate thoughts that happen, I consciously and instantly take control of my thoughts, and I start focusing on things that I'm grateful for. And I start saying affirmations to myself. So I start the mind in that positive direction immediately. It doesn't happen automatically every single time. Sometimes it does because I practice it so often. But that's the first, if you can get control of your mind first thing in the morning, it will help set up the rest of your day. So I start thinking of things I'm grateful for, whether it's my kids, it's my wife, it's, I know that if I go open the window, I see this big, beautiful tree outside that I love to look at in the mornings. It's just simple things like that to get the mind in a really good place to start the day. Next, I go down, make some tea or a cappuccino with some mushroom coffee, some honey, some almond milk, and go onto a power plate, which is a lymphatic stimulation machine that I love. I talk a lot about these, and it basically helps get the blood flowing, and it really supports the joints, and it gets lymphatic system moving right away. And I'll stand on that, and I'll do about a 5 or 6 minute Qigong practice, which is a, I don't have time to go into it now, but it's kind of a meditation. It's a little bit of energy healing, and it's affirmations for myself, for my day, for my goals, for what I'm working towards. And so, you know, I do that. And then if I have time in the morning, I still have a little extra time, I might sit outside, watch the sun come up a bit, do a little bit of reading, or I go straight to the gym and work out. So, you know, getting the day started in a good direction, getting some blood flowing, getting your mind set in a really good way, getting good nutrition. Oh, actually, before I even have the cappuccino, I have a big glass of green vegetable juice with some supplements. And so getting nutrition in the body, I think of getting nutrition in the mind as important, right? As getting nutrition into the body first thing in the morning. And then getting some exercise going. So, you know, going to the gym and getting blood flowing, lifting weights, dopamine release, you know, building strength, all these kinds of really wonderful things that are not only good for the body, but also good for the mind. And then throughout the day as I'm working, you know, I will do little Qigong practices, little affirmation practices, 2 minutes, 1 minute, 3 minutes here and there, between interviews, between meetings. Sometimes I'll just go and sit outside and relax for 20 minutes in the sunshine, get some vitamin D, and like get away from the technology, right? It's so important to like take a little bit of time for yourself and just get away from screens and technology and whatever it is that's taking your attention, and just go be out in nature. It's so rejuvenating and so refreshing. And then I'll be working most of the day, most days. And then I usually train again in the evening. I'm a CrossFit athlete, and I do Olympic weightlifting And so then I'll usually go back to the gym in the evening after I'm done working as well. Spend some time with the kids and similar practice when I go to bed. I prepare for bed, do a gratitude practice as I'm getting ready for sleep. Think about the good things that have happened in my day. Think about my kids, my family, and then also read something I would consider valuable for the mind. You know, I don't read scary novels. I don't read, you know, things that are, I read things that are nourishing the mind, whether it's a biography of somebody, it's an inspirational thing. It's a book about health or nutrition. So, you know, and then I sleep and I make sure I get 7 to 9 hours of sleep every night. Once in a while, I don't have the greatest sleep, but 90% of the time, 95% of the time, because I have prioritized sleep. You know, REM sleep is so important for waking up and feeling, having positive thoughts in the morning and feeling good mentally, having good mental energy is you need good REM sleep, right? For physical healing, we need good deep sleep. That's where the cellular rejuvenation happens. That's where autophagy happens, where the dead cells get cleaned up and recycled. That's where cancer cells get eliminated. That's where human growth hormone and testosterone gets released, right? For men and women in the right amounts, if you're not too stressed out during the day, which is important for repair of bones and tissues and muscles. And so you need a good balance of REM sleep and deep sleep for both mental alertness and feeling good in the morning, as well as physical rejuvenation. And then start all over again in the morning. And, you know, that's the bulk of it. But again, I've kind of developed this. I used to sit and meditate for hours at a time years ago. Like I would meditate for like 3 or 4 hours sometimes. But as I've gotten so busy over the years, it's like, I had to learn how to implement these short meditations into my day multiple times a day, which is why I do it in the morning. You know, I do it at night and I do it multiple times throughout the day as I'm getting ready for interviews or meetings or different things with work, really short ones. And I find for me, that works really, really well. And for others, I think it's important you have a 30-minute or 1 hour practice. And at times I may do a 30-minute or 1 hour guided practice, especially if I'm just overloaded, feeling fatigued. And it's like, you know, caffeine is not the solution at that point. Actually, in fact, it's going to make things worse. It's like, I need a 30 minute meditation. I will feel so rejuvenated. But I also, I guess I didn't mention also, I do sauna, I do red light therapy. I do ice baths, you know, there's a lot of other things I do on top of it, but I don't want to overwhelm people too much.
No, and you've given, I mean, what you've done is you've given people the snapshot of your day, and depending on when they can find the time, right? Like that's the one thing is we want to make sure that people understand that time is the one resource that we all have the same. It does not discriminate between gender, age, ethnicity, socioeconomic. It's your choice on how you choose to spend that resource that really matters. And so, Nathan, I just want to thank you so much for all of this amazing information that you have shared. I know with confidence that our audience, and I've said this on a few other interviews, that gang, those of you that are here listening to this, it's not a coincidence. All right. You are here for a purpose and for this entire week. And maybe this last hour has created something within you that your mind is not going to be able to shut off. And you're going to think of Nathan and something he said tomorrow and next week and next month. And that's probably an indicator that it's the tappy tap of the universe saying, hello, this was for you. So if someone wants to get a hold of you or they want to learn more about you, I know you've given a few resources throughout this, but where's the best place for people to connect with you?
Yeah, thank you for that. And I think that's such a beautiful thing to say, because that happens to me all the time. It's like something, you know, clicks. And then later the next day or the next week, I'm like, oh yeah, I need to do this. Or this person said that. I think that's a great, something important for people to take away. I think the best thing, you know, for people that I can help people with from here to kind of go deeper into what we've talked about and to serve and support people further is just give you my book. everyone can download it for free. It's an Amazon bestseller. You can buy it on Amazon, but I don't, you know, you don't have to buy it on Amazon. I'll just give it to you for free. You can go to becomingcancerfree.com. Right there, you can download the PDF for free. And then from there, you'll be on my newsletter and I can, we can be in touch that way. So yeah, I think that's the best way, becomingcancerfree.com.
Okay. Yeah. You know what, like gratitude is gratitude 100%. There's something more here. And I think the word is efferent when you don't have the right word for what you've just experienced. Efference. Yeah. So thank you. A million thank yous for saying yes to being on this virtual stage and for educating and inspiring all of us here today with your knowledge and your wisdom.
My honor, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, everyone, you may be getting sick and tired of me saying this to you at the end of every episode, but did you remember if you've been sitting for longer than 60 minutes, 50% of the blood flow to your legs is decreased. So before our next speaker, it's time to get up, fill your water bottle, go to the washroom, maybe grab something healthy. If it's sunny outside, go get your feet on the ground, take a few big breaths of fresh air, come back and you will be ready to be very sponge-like to absorb the amazingness of our next speaker. Thanks for being here, everyone. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.